breakout star in cinema in 2020 was Emerald Fennell. Her film, Promising Young Woman, which she wrote and directed, had everybody talking. It was the most controversial, most interesting movie of this year. This is Emerald Fennell. This episode of Five Things with Lynn Hirschberg is brought to you by the House of Chanel.
In 1921, Gabrielle Chanel with perfumer Ernest Beau revolutionized the world of fragrance with the creation of Number 5. An avant-garde manifesto made to enthrall the senses, Number 5 was the first abstract perfume, created with the magic of aldehydes and so many flowers that not a single note is truly identifiable. Learn how this legendary creation and its iconic bottle became the first woman's scent with the scent of a woman on InsideChanel.com.
One, two, three, four, five. Questions with Lynn. Questions with Lynn.
So the way this podcast works is, as they probably sent you the template, the first thing is a person in your life that has had a lot of resonance or importance. Who would that person be?
I mean, I've been very lucky that there are so many people that are just so wonderful and that I love so much. But I think the person I first thought of was my best friend, Daisy, who has been my best friend since we were four.
Wow.
And I think, you know, female friendship is such a big part of the film. And it's such a, it's just such an extraordinary and unique thing, I think, to know someone almost your whole life. And it's just an incredibly lucky thing. And she just, yeah, she's just the coolest person I know.
Were you friends from the first minute you met, from the jump?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit hazy being four, but I'm pretty sure she was a bit older than me. I was young for my year and she was a bit older for our year. And so I was always sort of, I remember being very impressed by how sophisticated she was as a 4.5-year-old. And actually she remains an incredibly sophisticated person. And so, yes, I think it was pretty immediate. She was very, very funny. She is very, very funny. And I think I was immediately sort of willing and ready to sort of trot behind her.
What were you like as a 4-year-old? What were you like as a child?
Oh, God, probably a nightmare. I think very attention-seeking, very...
precocious.
Precocious, definitely annoying, quite tall, probably. And my mother, who is wonderful, let me and my sister wear whatever we wanted. Her policy was, you know, just let them wear what they want, because then that will sort of... they'll develop their own sense of style. Style then became a sort of tiny stripper, or, you know, I was often wearing clothes that were sort of leopard print that really were not
I love that,
age appropriate. So I suppose I was like that. And then Daisy was, she's a kind of silent assassin, so she's very funny and very wry, but she's a watcher, I suppose. And so I think probably from the outside it would seem like our friendship, I was the sort of, like, I don't know, maybe it would seem like I was the driving force, but I don't think that's... I've always thought of her as being the leader.
Do you show her your work? Did you show her the script for Promising Young Woman before you went into production?
I showed her the script. I was staying with her actually in New York when I finished the script and sent it in. I went to go and stay with her for a few days. I was living in London, and it just, yeah, it's just, you know, sometimes you need a break. And then she came and saw quite an early cut of it. Yeah, so she's been there through the whole process.
And what did she say? What did she say? What was her thought when she first read the script?
I mean, I'm very bad at remembering when it comes to work. I mean, you know, I don't think she said she hated it.
I'm sure not.
But, you know, I'm sure that she said she liked it very much. But we don't, you know, we do very different things. And it's not really one of those friendships that's in any way rooted in work. So I think she would have been incredibly supportive, but also almost tangentially. So, you know, it's not really what our friendship is about, is that sort of thing.
So let's go to the second question, which is a place that has a lot of meaning for you. What place would that be?
So I think the place for me was... the house that me and my sister grew up in when we were children in Herefordshire, which is quite a remote part of England and an extraordinarily beautiful part of England. And
can you say the name again? I think it got swallowed.
It is a very much a rural Jura type of word, Herefordshire.
Okay. It's very English.
It wasn't just my terrible enunciation, but probably mostly. But so, yeah, so mum and dad rented a house, a cottage in Herefordshire. And we lived in a village sort of next door to their best friends, and their daughter was best friends with my sister, and the village had tons of kids in it. And it was just, you know, it was just very bucolic and lovely. And I suppose the most ludicrously chocolate boxy, ye olde British sort of that there is, but it was just such a lovely place to be. And I think now I'm a grown up, probably quite an unusual time, because we were really allowed to sort of do what we wanted and kind of, you know, bike around. And definitely there was a kind of sense of freedom, and that everyone was kind of looking out for each other. It was just very, yeah, it was just very, very nice.
Were you a rebellious child? Were you restless?
Definitely not rebellious. Definitely not rebellious at all. In fact, I would say I'm like, I really love rules. I'm really bad at breaking rules. It's not to say that I haven't been in trouble because of various things, but I don't like it. I don't like being told off. But so no, I wouldn't say I was reckless. Sadly, I wish I was sort of swinging from trees and like, but no. I was probably quite bookish and really obsessed with TV, obsessed with films and television.
Oh, really? Yeah. What were your favorite television shows at that time?
Oh, wow. I mean, everything. Again, mom and dad, very open-minded, probably too open-minded about what we were allowed to watch. So it depends what age, but obviously it was all the Disney movies, but then Baywatch. It was the time of Baywatch. And Saved by the Bell and all of those 90s shows where America was just like this golden place full of cheerleaders and Pamela Anderson and kind of, yeah, sort of golden loveliness. So I was kind of glued to all of that. And then later, I suppose, probably when I was about 10 or 11, I started getting very heavily into quite garish Lifetime based on a true story stories.
Really? Fascinating.
Anything like, I mean, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle is a bad example because it's a, you know, it's a movie. But it was things like, yeah, Sleeping with the Enemy, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, Potboilers. There was one with Tiffany Amber Thiessen that I kind of vaguely remember that was very sort of very dark and I had on VHS. And again, but it was definitely the more garish and age inappropriate, the better.
What did you have on your walls? Did you have posters up? Did you have pictures of Pam Anderson in her red bathing suit?
I don't
think. Or David Hasselhoff, for that matter.
Oh, it wouldn't have been David Hasselhoff. to me, that age, he would have been a sort of 1,000 years old. If anyone, it would have been Hobie.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, I see that.
Definitely Zach Morris.
And did you do High School Musical? That's a little younger, I think.
I'm a little bit old for that, but yeah. I would have been hard into it. I mean, every time there's a new craze, like BTS or One Direction, I just thank God that I'm not a sort of 13, 12-year-old now, because the content that would have been on the internet would have been, it would have been impossible for me to move on with my life.
I have a deep weakness for BTS. I'm sort of obsessed with BTS.
Oh, they're amazing.
They're amazing. They're amazing. Yeah.
I mean, how could you cope?
I know, it's true. I am practically there anyway. And yeah. Dynamite got me through the pandemic, I swear. I was trying to do the dance in Central Park and people were staring at me. It was good. So let's go to the third thing, which is an inanimate object.
Well, because I'm a very sort of greedy and avaricious person, objects are things that I care much too much about, I think.
I love that.
And so any kind of, almost all clothes are kind of fetishized to an insane degree.
Do you name them? I read recently that Dolly Parton names her favorite clothes. I'm kind of obsessed with this.
That's so cool. No, I think, I think it is more shopping, which sounds so awful. I think it's the moment of, if I buy this, I could be this person.
Mm, I love that.
And then you have it. And of course, you're just the same person, same disappointing person that you were before you bought the straw hat with an enormous ribbon trailing down the back of it. But it's kind of who you might be. It's the possibility that I think clothes afford. But so, you know, almost all clothes are things I'm obsessed with. But the thing, my father's a jewelry designer and he makes very beautiful, intricate sort of one-off things. But one of the things that he gave me and my sister when we were small was a chain link bracelet and then, you know, charms.
Oh, you have charm bracelet.
Yeah, so it's a charm bracelet, but it started just as a kind of naked bracelet, I suppose, normal bracelet, empty. And then kind of over the course of our lives, charms have been added.
Oh, I love that.
So I've just had it. Well, I suppose the charms would have started being added in my teenage years, but they've got everything, you know, it's got all my friends on there, my boyfriends.
Oh, really?
Past boyfriends. The first book that I published. Yeah. And sort of little, just all of these things. So it's sort of my whole life on there. And I love it because the kind of policy for me, I think, has been like never remove anything. Even things that seem very anachronistic, yeah, are still on there. And it's now very, very crowded and certainly kind of sort of too heavy to work in or do anything like that. And again, it always catches on things, but I absolutely love it.
Did you have a particular charm for the film? For Promising Young Woman?
Yet. But there may be one forthcoming. I don't know, because that's the thing that's so lovely about it, is it's a sort of surprise.
Ah.
And sometimes there are things on there that you don't, you know, that you, it's nice that somebody else decides for you, I suppose, in a way, which parts of your life are, you know, I don't know,
graduated. This would mean that your father is very aware of everything that's going on in your life.
Oh, yeah, super aware, much too aware. I mean, my parents are really, really much too involved in both me and my sister's lives. but I mean, no, I mean, obviously it's not, I don't have one for when I lost my virginity.
I'm glad to hear that.
There's a certain kind of levels to this thing, but
that's really,
in general, yes, it's graduating university.
Yes.
It's your best friends. It's, you know, the place that you spend. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of an example. There was a BBC microphone when
I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, just like it's, yeah, I love it.
That's wonderful. Are you going to wear this to the Oscars?
I am not going to wear it to the Oscars, only because I think in a funny way, it is sort of personal.
Uh-huh.
And so I, you know, in the same way that I probably wouldn't wear, I don't know, like it's a sort of personal thing as much as the sort of gold bracelet can be personal, I suppose.
Are you a superstitious person? Do you have things that you do before beginning work or when you go somewhere? I have a ring I always bring on a plane.
No, I'm just highly medicated, which generally seems to ward off most of the terrible intrusive thoughts. No.
What did you do it? How did you lose it? Was it true? Do you remember? Were you confused when you thought you knew? Now you see through it. You can tell her.
So for the next question, this is a slightly complicated, which is something in your life that you thought you really wanted or that didn't work out, but turned out to be a very positive thing that it, you know, turning a negative into a positive.
So the thing for me is a negative thing that turned out to be positive, which is that when I was about 15, I was on my way to a party and wearing a kind of crop top, as was the fashion of the time.
Yes. And you were that girl that day.
I was a girl. And a woman, very well-dressed, softly spoken middle-aged woman was kind of loitering near me. And eventually I said, you know, can I help you? And she came over and she said, I'm so sorry. I've just been standing over here just wondering if I should tell you or not. And I said,
oh my God.
Okay. And she said, I'm sorry, it's just that I'm psychic and you're going to die of stomach cancer before the age of 30.
Oh my God.
And so I sort of said, what? And I think I said something along the lines of, I'm on my way to a party, or, you know, something. I was so shocked. And then I don't remember, you know, she was gone. I don't remember what, there was no exchange, I don't think, after that. I think I was too shocked.
I can imagine.
It was such an interesting thing, because I think it has stayed with me for so, of course, it stayed with me for so many reasons, because in spite of the fact that I'm not superstitious, it is something that hangs over you. And what fascinated me about it, and I still think about it all the time, was I kind of had two thoughts at once. And the first thing was, why would you do that to someone? And then the second thought was, oh, I know exactly why you'd do that.
Why?
Because basically punching someone in the face.
Yes.
But it's more effective because
it'll haunt them forever.
Yeah. It was basically a maiming. It was a sort of completely, it was a hit and run. And it still strikes me as a masterclass of cruelty and kind of genius sadism. And it really, I suppose, is one of the things that actually has been, I suppose, a touchstone for me when it comes to, you know, so many of the things that I think about with my work, which is how women express rage and how we are able to affect people in a way that we rarely see. You know, how are women frightening? Because they're not frightening in the way that we see in movies and in TV and in books necessarily. They're frightening in a much, much more complicated and sort of distant way, I suppose. And so I think that is something I think about all the time. And it has been, obviously, there have been moments where I get a stomach ache and I'm like, well, this is it.
Oh my God.
Here she comes. But mostly, I just think thank you to that woman. Because
It
was a real epiphany about what you can do without lifting a finger to a stranger. And that interests me, and that will always interest me.
It's great that you can distance yourself from it to that point. I'm very impressed by that, because it would seem so emotionally devastating that it would be hard to put it into the kind of perspective that you have. Did it take you a minute to get there?
I don't know. I certainly was rattled, of course, but I'm lucky in that I'm not, knock on wood, she says, I'm not superstitious, knock on wood.
And you're healthy, thank God.
Exactly. But I think it's that I wasn't quite the right person to have the sort of impact she was looking for. I don't think I'm vulnerable to that sort of information in a way that a lot of people would be, and certainly a lot of young women, you know, don't believe in horoscopes, things like that. And I think, so that was a sort of protection. But also it was just fascinating, because I suppose, obviously, as you can probably tell from the my choices, I suppose I'd lived a very lucky, sheltered life.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if I'd ever been hurt by people, it was, you know, by friends or boy, you know, it was the usual thing. It was nothing too terrible. But that was, it was just so unique. And I kind of had to hand it to her. It was genius.
That's an amazing reaction. I have to say, I'm so impressed by that reaction, because I think most people would just be devastated and furious. So it's great that you were able to turn that into something positive.
Well, I think it helped, because the short film I wrote, Careful How You Go, which was really the reason that I was able to make Promising Young Woman. It was sort of three, because it went to Sundance.
And right.
Exactly, yeah. And it was three vignettes of women doing sort of nefarious things. And the last one was this woman. And, you know, obviously a slightly different reimagining of it, but it was the same kind of conversation.
But one of the things I love about Promising Young Woman that I think you did so deftly, and I wrote this actually in this cover story in W Magazine, is that while you're very sympathetic to your protagonist, at the same time, she seems completely unbalanced. It's a fascinating tightrope between she's right, but she's crazy. You know, there's a kind of, it's a very, very hard thing to achieve to get that kind of complexity. Because as you know, most characters are one thing or another. So I'm very impressed by that.
Thank you. That's so interesting because I don't think of her as crazy at all. I mean, I really don't. I'm not being facetious. I don't think she is crazy. I think she's, obviously there are lots of things she is. She's sort of grieving and traumatized and furious.
And obsessed.
And
you don't even think she's obsessed. Okay.
No. I know I'm not saying that, but it's a difficult word, obsession, because obsession kind of for me has the implication that the object of your obsession is kind of not unworthy. That's not quite the right word, but it is your problem and not whatever that obsession's problem is.
That's true. I see your point.
The thing here is that she is obsessed. She's rightly obsessed. She won't let go because something happened that was profoundly wrong.
Yes,
that's true. Everyone is telling her to forget it. And the more she's told to forget it, the more she refuses to do so. And I certainly think that some of the means that she uses, either to alleviate her own pain or to teach lessons, are often unkind, verging on cruel, or at least they seem to be so. But I've never felt that she was unhinged. I think she's just exhausted and furious. Uh-huh. And I think that we're just not used to seeing, you know, so much about the film, so much of it is about how much easier it is to just forget about it. Uh-huh. How much easier your life would be, how much nicer your life would be. And I have huge admiration for people who won't, because it's really lonely. The road of kind of righteousness, I suppose, for want of a better phrase. Like, and it's not often that sexy or fun.
So I'm wrong.
You're wrong, Lynn. You're deeply wrong. No.
I'm glad to be wrong. I'm always happy to be wrong. What was a purely joyous moment in your life? Pure happiness.
That's so nice. I think marrying my husband.
Oh.
Which is so disgusting. And I'm mortified even to say it. But the thing is that...
The actual wedding day or the act of marrying him?
I think the whole thing. I mean, you know, it's a pretty basic choice. But we'd been together...
No one's actually said that, by the way.
Have they not? No, they've probably said...
No, you're the first.
They've probably said, the time I won my Nobel Prize.
No, there's been a lot of... I had to take off childbirth because that's so obvious, but...
Also, who would say that? Sorry. Who would say that's the most pure... I mean, look, some amazing person, surely, but I would say it's about as far as joy as anyone can ever get. Such a nightmare hell. But, you know, good on them. I think, honestly, yeah, it's just... The thing is, it's just to be... I think also now it was reasonably recent. And I think that the thing of being in a room full of everyone you love. It's all kind of the only time in your life where everyone you love sort of has to be in the same room because you sort of made them by getting married.
And how was the dress? How was the dress? That's very important.
It cost, I think, $29.99 from the website, and it was described by my mother as gynecological. So
what does that mean? It was short?
It was very, very short.
I love that. Was that intentional? Was that in your mind's eye as a child?
No, I just couldn't find anything I liked, and it seemed more fun. Uh-huh. You know, it seemed more fun than the other options. And also the idea, for some reason, as somebody who is so grotesque about clothes and who spends so much of my money on buying things that are really not suited to me, something about the wedding dress, the thing of a wedding dress, the kind of the sort of parade around it and the kind of emotional investment made into them. And this is, that sounds very mean. I don't mean to...
No, it sounds normal.
Like, denigrate other people's relationships, because I know friends of mine have had the most beautiful dresses and they've loved them and it's been magical. But like, I don't know, it seemed odd to me that suddenly I just had to wear something that I would never have worn in any other conceivable circumstances, you know? It just felt like such a weird thing. So I kind of, I suppose in a slightly annoying way, just went the other way.
And at what point did your mother tell you it was gynecological? After the wedding or during the wedding?
Constantly. Luckily, she didn't give a toss at all and thought it was hilarious. But I think, I mean, she was just being funny. But I think it was, you know, I suppose the dream wedding would have been Vegas. Would have been a little chapel of love. And I suppose that was my inspiration.
Elvis impersonator.
Yeah, that would have been perfect. But there are very few in England that you can find that are, yeah, that are Vegas level.
Yeah. All right. Well, you've been wonderful. And I look forward to meeting you in real life after spending so much time with you.
Thank you so much.
Much for listening to Five Things with Lynn Hirschberg. I would like to thank Feline Newman. I'd also like to thank Michael Beckert for all of his help and patience. I'd like to thank Sarah Moonves, who makes everything possible at W Magazine. I'd also like to thank Robin Shore for her brilliant theme song. And thank you to Rich Cerbini and Matt Solomon at Hanger Studios. To view more W Magazine content, please follow us on Instagram at WMag or check out my screen tests on W Magazine's YouTube channel. And I'd also like to thank Zora. La 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 la